Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Think of Santa Cruz County as a rural area? Well, your government does and has therefore set the Medicare payment fee so unrealistically low that medical doctors are being forced to opt out of seeing Medicare patients altogether. It's a growing crisis which can be fixed with a simple reclassification of Santa Cruz to reflect its true status as just about the least affordable area in our country. Learn all about it on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on We Hate To, But We've Got To Alert You Radio. AM 1080 KSCO.
Swirling and the Saturday morning special at KSCO 1080 on your radio dial here in Santa Cruz, California. It's 13 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're waiting for Michael Swirling to get on the line here and to get going with us here. We're going to be talking about Medicare, dependency, or entitlement. And we've got a special guest with us today, Larry DiCantelli?
DiCantelli.
Larry, you there?
I sure am. Good morning.
Okay. I want to thank you for being here this morning, and I want to welcome everybody. Remember, this is a call-in show. We'll be getting some information from Larry here, and hopefully Michael here in the next few minutes, and go from there. We okay? There we go. Okay. Are you there?
Good morning.
Oh, Hi. There you are. Okay.
Hi.
Well,
hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Larry, why don't you recap with us or give us an overview of what exactly is the condition here in Santa Cruz, and why have we been designated a rural when maybe this is obviously costing us a lot of problems?
Well, I think the history actually goes back in the early years of Medicare in the late 60s. Santa Cruz probably, everybody would agree, in the late 60s was a rural county. Santa Cruz, along with 46 other counties, were defined in the early years of Medicare as rural counties. And essentially what has happened going forward is each 3 years Medicare comes through and methodically defines by county how much it costs to practice medicine in each of California's almost 60 counties. And Medicare stipulates that if a county's cost to the practice of medicine goes above 5% of the base of what the rural counties are in the state of California, each county whose costs begin to rise receive a higher payment designation. I think it surprises most people, but a doctor will receive very different rates for the exact same service in San Francisco than they would in Santa Cruz County. And in fact, in the nation, San Francisco physicians are paid the highest of any county in the entire country for services. For instance, a standard office visit, a physician receives the acceptable Medicare reimbursement in San Francisco is approximately $65. The exact same service in Santa Cruz County and the other so-called rural counties in California is about $54. So there is a 25% difference in what Medicare pays physicians for the same services in San Francisco and in Santa Cruz County.
Now, you say we had this designation going back to the 40s, if I...
Now, actually, Medicare started during the Johnson administration.
Johnson, okay, that was
it. And it was... In 1967 or 68, Medicare determined that, well, we will probably assess each county separately within the state of California with a few exceptions. And the exceptions are they linked Alameda with Contra Costa, and they linked Santa Cruz with Monterey and San Benito County. So if San Benito, through the years, retains truly a rural character and the cost of living in San Benito is consistent with a rural county, and yet Santa Cruz finds itself increasingly urbanized, and the cost of living, as everybody knows, certainly is much more reflective of the cost of living in the Bay Area and San Francisco. By linking us with all of Monterey, which is largely rural, and San Benito, which is truly rural, it has held Santa Cruz down to a rural designation simply because of a decision made in 1967 to link these three counties into one locality.
Now, was that decision made by the local Board of Supervisors or by the state of California or the U.S. government?
This would be a Medicare decision that was made in the 60s, and we're still living with it.
Now, is that part because, like in Santa Cruz County, only 4% of our land is zoned urban residential? Does our zoning have something to do with that designation, or is it our proximity or the fact that we have a majority of our land is considered, well, I guess they have it designated rural residential?
Well, you have many other counties which are standalone counties. Kern County may be juxtaposed to another rural county, and yet they do not link those counties together. The three counties which are most adversely impacted by this are first and foremost Santa Cruz County, second is Sonoma, and the third are Santa Barbara. Surprisingly, San Diego County also finds itself in a rural designation, but Medicare's designation of the cost of the practice of medicine in San Diego is only 4% higher than all the other combined rural counties. In Santa Cruz, it is 9% higher, and in Sonoma, it is 8% higher, and in Santa Barbara, it is 7% higher. And those counties retain rural designations because an arbitrary decision was made in the 1960s by the federal government to link those counties with adjoining rural counties.
Now, do we need to go to our national representatives, Sam Farr, folks like that, to work to get this designation changed, or is this something the local Board of Supervisors has to pass a resolution? What's exactly the process?
The local Board of Supervisors is well aware of this problem, and it is in the best interests of all health care providers or consumers or the broad public in Santa Cruz to undo this designation. The Board of Supervisors has passed a resolution in June and sent a letter to Tommy Thompson, Secretary of Health and Welfare, asking for de-designation of this county as a rural county. Because this is not... no individual physician benefits over any other individual physician. There are no special interests within the county. The entire county would stand to gain if we were treated according to Medicare's own rules. That is, because we are 5% higher than all the other rural counties, we deserve a redesignation as, you know, we can call it urban, but a higher designation that would reflect almost a 10% increase for every service provided to a Medicare beneficiary.
How many Medicare patients do we have in Santa Cruz County? Do you have an idea of that?
Well, I know at the Santa Cruz Medical Clinic, where I'm the physician executive, we have approximately 18,000. And if you extrapolate that out to a county population of 260,000, I would think that would be, top of my head, 50,000 patients. Oh, and that will, of course, there's a couple of things that are happening. There is an aging population,
mm-hmm.
and with the housing costs going up, we are seeing fewer and fewer people, younger people, able to afford the county. So as the baby boomers approach Medicare age, which will occur later in this decade, we're going to see more and more patients becoming Medicare patients in this county.
Is there something that the private citizen, the listener today, can do to help speed up this redesignation of our rural status to a more urban status?
Well, our Congressman, Sam Farr, is aware of the problem. He is stuck. The Medicare rules stipulate that in order for Santa Cruz to be designated urban, they have a zero-sum game rule in place where X number of dollars flow into the Medicare system into California. Medicare is very, very sophisticated in creating impediments to change. If Santa Cruz were to be brought into San Mateo County or a Santa Clara County type of a designation, all the other rural counties would have to give up a little bit. And Medicare has stipulated that the only way that Santa Cruz and Sonoma and Santa Barbara counties can be redesignated in a manner consistent with how really the economics of those counties have changed is if all the other counties and the physicians and the board of supervisors of 44 other California counties would agree to take a slight cut in Medicare reimbursement. Well, that's an impediment that I think completely prevents our three counties from being receiving the type of payments that we really deserve.
So when you say they've got to agree, is this their board of supervisors? Is it their medical practitioners in these counties? Or exactly who are we talking about that must agree to this?
It would be the providers of care, and that in this case would probably be the county medical societies of each of those counties, and this is not going to happen.
Doesn't sound like it.
Not going to happen. and the problem is compounded by the fact that Medicare, while it may be only 15-20% of our patients, many, many other health insurers tie their reimbursement to the Medicare fee schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So insofar as we are defined as a rural county in the eyes of Medicare, Aetna, Blue Cross, Blue Shield peg their reimbursements in some part to the Medicare fee schedule. So the problem is compounded. And across the board, imagine sitting here with the high cost of living as a physician, whether you're in mid-career, end of career, or trying to start out, and you look to the north or you look to the east and you see two counties where for the exact same services you could receive 20% more, you can see that the market will probably lead to an exodus of physicians, or at least we will no longer be able to recruit physicians to this county that we need. And we're starting in a real way to feel the effects of that exodus and those barriers to recruitment.
A doctor who's graduating from medical school and is completing his residency, how much money has he amassed in cost to get to this point where he's now ready to go out and practice in the real world?
Well, the average, and it may depend on whether they're a specialist who has spent many more years in training, but it's between $80,000 and $150,000. We're seeing many physicians come into the county with $100,000 student loans that they have to service, and they look at a mean. I think the Sentinel reported the median cost of a house in the county is $540,000.
Yep.
If they were lucky enough to have $100,000 from family to do a down payment, they're still looking at a $400,000+ mortgage. They're looking at servicing significant student loans, and not surprisingly, we have enthusiastic first visits once they take a look at the real estate market and look at the economic realities. And if they're savvy enough and drive down to take a look at what reimbursements are here, what we are seeing throughout coastal California, but in particular those three counties, we see great difficulty in recruitment of the physicians that we need, particularly we'll be needing in the next 10 years.
Yeah, we've seen this in a lot of other industries as well. Texas Instruments was, for years, stopped trying to recruit people to Santa Cruz because they would bring them in for Texas or other places where they had operations, and they would say, God, this is a beautiful place to live. Then they would look at the housing costs, and they look at the other costs of living and say, I can't sell my home from wherever I lived before, and even even put down a modest down payment here without having a $4,000 or $5,000 a month mortgage, and I'm not going to do that. And I'm sure that it's even compounded more when you're locking about $100,000 or more in student loans that you're trying to pay off, even at a 3 or 4% interest rate. I don't know what the current interest rate. I remember when I finished school, I think I had a 3.5% interest rate for the couple student loans that I had. So I can imagine what it must be for a physician, and even trying to find rental property here has made it very expensive too. I mean, a two-bedroom apartment now is going for around $1,400-$1,500 a month, so that's not cheap in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. And it's not limited to physicians, of course. We see the same difficulties with for RNs and key technicians. I mean, you could be a brilliant physician, but if you do not have a CT technician available to do the CAT scan that when you need it, then certainly the quality of care will be affected negatively.
Well, we're glad to say that we've got Michael Olson on the line. Michael Zwirling on the line. Michael, you there?
We hope so.
Well, we had a little. What do you say? We had the best technical difficulties of any station in the world, so we're consistent with our mantra here. Michael, why don't you go ahead and take it over, and I'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mike. Appreciate your being there for us here. For those of you who don't understand what's going on, I don't either. we have a special machine that makes it sound like I'm in the studio. It's supposed to make it sound like I'm in the studio, even though I'm far away. And it was tested and retested and re-retested, and it worked just great, and it didn't work this morning. So that's why I wasn't there when I was supposed to be. But want to thank Mike Fitt and our guest, Dr. Larry DiCataldi. It is quite the Medicare crisis that is going on in Santa Cruz County. And forgive me, gentlemen, if we are going over, if I ask some questions which have already been asked. hello?
We got you.
Yeah, okay. So I think what we should probably do now is take our first commercial break, and then we'll come back and continue with the program. In the meantime, those of you who want to participate and ask questions about why things are the way they are in Santa Cruz County, it's a great time to talk about HMO costs and so forth. Give us a call at 479-1080 or 477-1340. If you want to fax your contribution to today's Saturday special talking about the Medicare crisis in Santa Cruz County, that phone number is 475-2967. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Doesn't pay to try. All the smart boys know why. It doesn't mean I didn't try. I just never know why.
For great food and fun,
Severino's. Hi, I'm Stella Doro here to tell you about my favorite place to hang out, Severino's off State Park Drive in Aptos. Every Thursday through Saturday, Severino's offers great music in a classy and comfortable lounge. Come early for happy hour and enjoy a delicious meal before the show. The heated patio is the perfect place to relax with your friends during these warm August nights. Saturday, August 3rd and 10th, catch the smoothest cat in town, the legendary Ralston Brown. Ralston will also be at Severino's every Thursday this month. Friday the 2nd, see Steve Zarnicki and Nate Pruitt. Motown Express will have you dancing in the streets. Friday, August 9th, as well as Saturday, August 17th and 21st. Friday, August 16th, I'll be swinging Western style with the return of Saddle Up and Boogie. The cool and sexy Wally and his cocktail combo is coming to Sevy's Friday, August 23rd. Then I'm back with my jazz group, Stella by Barlight, Saturday, August 23rd and Friday the 30th. Hope to see you at Severino's. Remember to bring your dancing shoes.
Hi, I'm Camisa. I'm 8 years old, and I like to dance, ride horses, swim, even play golf. But most of all, I like to be proud of my mom, Patrice Edwards, for all the things she does so well. Besides raising me and my sister and brother, she also runs not one, but 3 first-rate local newspapers. How in the world can she do all this? Is she Superwoman or what? Anyhow, the whole purpose of this announcement is to get you all to look for and read my mom's great newspapers, the Aptos Times, the Capitola Times, and the Scotts Valley Times. Free everywhere it should be.
Why don't you pick up a copy of the current Capitola Times where you can read about just exactly where the homeless will now be going? That's the Capitola Times. The Times Publishing Group. publisher of the Capitola Times, Aptos Times, and Scotts Valley Times. Available for free at locations throughout Santa Cruz County. Times Publishing is locally and independently owned and operated.
This is Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland with great news for homeowners and homebuyers. Mortgage rates have taken a substantial drop, and for many of you, this means that it's time to call us at Pacific Inland to find out how much you can save with our low-rate guarantee program. If you purchased or refinanced a home in the last 2 years, I know we can save you money or help you to pull cash out without increasing your current payment. Call us now at 475-2600 and ask about our low-rate guarantee program. That's 475-2600, Pacific Inland, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
San Lorenzo Floors, Abbey Carpets, naturally your choice.
San Lorenzo Floors is the carpet store your mother would shop in. San Lorenzo Floors will help you pick the perfect carpet for your needs. Custom patterns and colors, residential or commercial carpet selections will match the big box prices. Just bring us their prices and get our service. San Lorenzo Floors, on the corner of Mount Hermon Road and Scotts Valley Drive in Scotts Valley. Call 831-461-1300. Whether it's custom pergo, premium flooring, ceramic tile, or vinyl, San Lorenzo Floors in Scotts Valley has exactly the right floor covering for your needs, residential and commercial installations. San Lorenzo Floors is your natural flooring headquarters. Think of us as the no-spin floor covering store. San Lorenzo Floors, on the corner of Mount Hermon Road and Scotts Valley Drive in Scotts Valley. Call 831-461-1300.
San Lorenzo Floors, Abbey Carpet, naturally your choice.
Computer users, listen up. For $35, you can get a 128-megabyte memory upgrade for your PC. That's right, $35 for 128 megabytes of PC 133 memory. And if you bring your computer to our shop, we'll install the memory for free. And if you like, we'll inspect your cooling fans, clean your chassis, and scan your system for dangerous viruses. All of this for free with the purchase of a $35 memory upgrade.
For fast, competent computer service and name-brand computer parts, call Day and Night Computer anytime from 9 a.m. till 11 p.m. daily at 465-7340.
Okay, we're back. This is Mike Schmidt with Michael Zwirling, and we're talking about Medicare, and it's about 28 and a half minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock, and Dr., I'm still having trouble with this.
DiGattoli, Larry.
DiGattoli. Okay, doctor. You're dealing with an Oklahoman. What do you want, right? Okay, we're talking about Medicare today, and whoops, we're okay. Michael, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Back to
Dr. Larry, I'm wondering what it is that our listeners can do, if anything, to fix this problem.
Well, I think the first thing that the first order of business is we need to know what's going on. We need to understand it. We need to know what the effects will be unless we change it. And then we need to, you know, I'm scratching my head to strategize on how we can change the bureaucracy of Washington. But we certainly have caught the attention of our congressional representative, and he
is still trying to figure out what is going on, or do you know?
Take a look.
Now the rest of us need to know.
Well, let me create an analogy that might be uncomfortable for many people between Medi-Cal, which is California's Medicaid, and Medicare. For years and years, physicians were adequately reimbursed for taking care of a Medicare patient, and they were horribly reimbursed for Medi-Cal patients. And that's created terrible barriers to access to care for Medi-Cal recipients in the state. And that's the plan, that's the safety net for low-income Californians. In 1989, Medicare completely redid its payment system to physicians nationally. And since 1989, the increases on average for physicians in the Medicare program have been about 1% a year. Last October, they were cut 5% across the board. And if you just simply do the math, that's 12 years of a 1% increase and then a 5% cut, and the cost to provide medical care has been rising at 10% a year. Can you see what's happening to the Medicare reimbursement system to physicians? Medicare,
yeah, it's called massive squeeze.
Massive squeeze.
Now,
and, right.
Why were the payments cut? What was the reason?
Well, that there was the Medicare oversight. It's called CMS. It used to be called HCFA, H-C-F-A, the Centers for Medicare and Medi-Cal Services. In Washington, the Congress passed a series of rules that defined how annually they would set the Medicare payment system, and through a complex set of accounting rules that most people don't understand, there was an obligatory cut instituted across the board of 5% for all physician services last October. We're hoping that some of that will be undone this year. But the truth is that very few people, and I certainly don't understand how that 5% cut was calculated. But it's real dollars. It compounds the problem. And my point was is that Medicare payment structures, which used to be really at a break-even point for physicians in terms of it pretty much Medicare paid a doctor about what it cost to provide services. Medi-Cal never intended to do so, and certainly probably paid half of what it costs to provide care. Medicare rates are now at a point where physicians lose money for each Medicare patient that they see, particularly in those counties in California where there is this huge disparity between what it costs to provide care.
Do you feel that physicians are suffering unfairly or being thought of in an ill manner by patients because they're not taking Medicare? Because they can't, maybe they don't understand that they simply can't afford to.
Well, for years and years, physicians tried to take their fair share of either indigent patients or Medi-Cal patients. What I think is we're going to get some negative PR about is the fact that Medicare patients are the reimbursement the docs get no longer pay for the costs of practice of medical care. So to some extent, each Medicare patient that a doctor may see, they lose money. And so the physicians will naturally be reluctant to take more and more Medicare patients. And in fact, we have a
journey. It reminds me of that that silly joke about we sell it below cost, but we make it up in volume. I mean, the more volume you do, the more farther behind you get. So it's terrible.
Same, the big congressional issue now is the pharmacy benefit, because as you know, you're asking about what types of things that Medicare pays for. Medicare does not pay for pharmacy, and that is the Congress is obsessed now with providing some type of a pharmacy benefit, and I know they're at an impasse between the House and the Senate on what it would look like. But the irony would be, at least in this county, we might have a pharmaceutical benefit for our Medicare beneficiaries, but there's not going to be any doctors who will be able to see those patients.
So there will be nobody to prescribe the medication.
Right.
What a bizarre state of affairs.
It is.
You know, while we're on that subject, I've got a comment. I don't know if people have noticed that at least half of the commercials that you see on television are now for prescription drugs. Ask your doctor about Lipitor and whatever. It's really scary. I mean, to me, it indicates that it's only the pharmaceutical companies that are wealthy enough to be able to pay for network television advertising time. I mean, it's just amazing. Talk about an industry that's totally out of control. Anyhow, we are talking about the Medicare crisis in Santa Cruz County, which for some reason, ladies and gentlemen, in the infinite wisdom of our federal government people, has been classified as a rural county, and therefore the medical doctors who practice in our rural county are only permitted to take rural county fees, when the actual cost to provide medical services in our anything but rural county is, if anything, as much or more than in urban counties. something is wrong with this picture, ladies and gentlemen, and you need to know about it. You need to get in touch with your congresspeople and get them off the dime here. Something's got to change. There has to be some sort of a reclassification. We're talking about the Medicare crisis in Santa Cruz County with our guest, Dr. Larry D. Cataldi, who is the CEO of Santa Cruz Medical Clinic. You are invited to participate in this two-way telephone talk show on AM 1080 KSCO. You may do so by calling 479-1080 or 477-1340. If you want to participate via fax, our fax number is 475-2967. And if you're outside of Santa Cruz County, doesn't mean you can't participate if you care to. Just call us with area code 831 in front of all of that. I understand we have a caller on line one. That would be Mark in Watsonville. Can we bring up Mark and make sure I'm in conference so we can talk?
Hello, Mark. Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Good. I hear you 5x5 down here.
Great.
You know, it's interesting. The good doctor brought up Medi-Cal. Medicare is a national program that was started by Lyndon Johnson with the Great Society back in 1965. And my wife and I last year paid into Medicare. We're a working couple. You pay off your total gross income. There's no cap on what you're going to pay into. We paid $2,200 into Medicare, and we will continue paying roughly this much until we retire. So there was a contract made with Americans at that time stating you pay 1% of your gross income while you're working, and we will take care of your medical care when you reach 65 or retire or whatever. Now, Medi-Cal is a totally different program. Medi-Cal is care for the indigent in California. Do you know what the Medi-Cal government paid into Medi-Cal just in California last year?
Tell us.
$18 billion. That's a B, not an M. Billion dollars. That was $9 billion by the state of California, and then there was $9 billion matching from the federal government. So $18 billion, of which 1% goes to fraud, so $1.8 billion is going to God knows where. But my point being is this was not part of the original Medicare program. You know, this was something that gets added on. Here in Watsonville, our local hospital, 87% of the births in our hospital are paid through Medi-Cal. So meaning the rest of us who come down there and have our children, we pay more to cover for, obviously, for these who do not pay. So one thing the doctor left out on the Medi-Cal program, those who have insurance, those who do pay, pay more to cover the difference. But my point being is I think Medicare is a good idea, a wonderful program. Something instituted as a benefit, a contract with American citizens that we will pay in every year while we work, and then we will be covered when we retire. Medi-Cal is something totally different. That is confiscating money from me, my wife, all of you out there who work, and are giving it to individuals who are not necessarily citizens. There are people who, you know, moved here recently from other countries, find themselves in need of medical care, and are demanding it from the state of California. So, sure, Medicare for us citizens gets hurt. It gets hammered. Down in Los Angeles, just this year, they're closing 11 county clinics because they have been overwhelmed with Medi-Cal patients, and the system is no longer economically viable. This is going to happen throughout California. So Santa Cruz County is not the only county being hurt by this. This is going to be a statewide issue. But remember, people, we paid $18 billion with a B into Medi-Cal last year. So the pie is getting divided up, and those of us who, you know, when I retire in 50 years, our piece is going to be that much smaller.
Mark, so are you suggesting then that the immigration plays a major role in this crisis?
Here in Watsonville, definitely. In Los Angeles, definitely. In that Medi-Cal is not restricted to citizens. It's not restricted to legal residents. It's open to anybody. So if an individual wants to cross the border tonight, have their baby in Watsonville tomorrow, that birth is covered through Medi-Cal. Now, when
Dr.
I went,
Larry has to pay about
well when I went down there, that was not the case. I had to pay $5,000, and you know, away you go.
Well, Mark, I have a couple points, and you're right. There is a clear distinction between the Medi-Cal program, which nationally is known as Medicaid, and the Medicare program. They're administered differently. They have different budgets. Medi-Cal is administered under the supervision of the federal government by each state. Medicare remains a nationally administered health plan for seniors and permanently disabled Americans. The other point that you made, you're alluding to the concept of cost shifting. That is, you pay far more for health care than a Medicare beneficiary or a Medi-Cal beneficiary does for the same services. And just simple economics, if a hospital or a physician loses money, a lot of money, for each Medi-Cal patient that they take care of, has break-even or a loss for a Medicare beneficiary, what's left are the two other pieces of the health care insurance pie, the HMOs and then the fee-for-service. And physicians and hospitals have to be able to make the bottom line.
Correct.
Through those two other plans, of plans.
I would love to see Medicare, that piece of the pie covered, and I agree with you. I think you should be getting a larger reimbursement, obviously, so you can stay, you know, in our county and being a doctor, and we appreciate you having here. And I think Medicare, because we have paid into it, we have the contract with our government, should be covered first. And then this $18 billion going to Medi-Cal, that should be something that comes on down later. And I think they should restructure your schedule for Medicare patients, and if they need to, then revamp what they're doing with Medi-Cal. But don't make us pay twice in that we're paying taxes for Medicare.
Right.
And then we're getting, like you stated, we get a larger bill for local services to cover for, you know, Medi-Cal and, unfortunately, Medicare patients.
How old are you, Mark?
I'm 50.
So you have 15 years, and your government made a contract with you, with us, 38 years ago.
Correct.
And my point is that the constraints, for whatever reason, on reimbursement to physicians and hospitals, there's been an attrition of reimbursement for payments to cover Medicare beneficiaries that is creating, I hate to say, a second-class type of a view. Providers can no longer adequately care for Medicare beneficiaries under the current payment system, and it is obviously worse in Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz and Los Angeles County.
Well, let me point out, Los Angeles has its own designation. They get paid 8% higher than in Santa Cruz. And yet, the cost, surprisingly, by Medicare's own definition, the cost to provide care in Santa Cruz is higher here than in Los Angeles County.
And I agree with you. The only thing is, if the clinics close in Los Angeles, it's irrelevant because the service will not be there, regardless of even if you had private insurance.
Well, there's a profound crisis in L.A. because of the large numbers of indigent Medi-Cal recipients.
Correct, which, as Michael Zuerling alluded to earlier, are you know, for the majority, recent immigrants to the country. But my only point is I think we as American citizens made a contract with our government. We paid into it for all these years, and I think, you know, I'm looking out for number one, but I think we should come first. And then, you know, handle Medicare, make sure the doctors are reimbursed correctly, and then address the Medi-Cal problem or program or whatever you want to call it. But I think in all fairness, American citizens should be addressed first, and then the other people get in line. And what's happening right now is the opposite, and actually we're even getting charged more because of it.
Okay, Mark. Thank you very much for your time.
I got to make one thing. The good doctor has a wonderfully talented son who I've seen play in several musical events, and it's been a real privilege knowing him.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. In Watsonville, it's the KSCO Saturday special. It's 10:45. 15 minutes remain in this hour. We're going to be on all next hour as well, discussing the Medicare crisis in Santa Cruz is getting worse. I don't know if you covered this in the first 10 or 15 minutes when I wasn't with you, gentlemen, but I understand from a private conversation with Dr. DiGataldi that come September 1st, the neurosurgeons are withdrawing their brains. Explain it to us, Doctor, please.
On September 1st, the three practicing neurosurgeons in this county, for a variety of reasons, one of which is reimbursement-related, Medicare reimbursement, will no longer provide brain surgery services either on an emergency basis or on an elective basis in this county. It's the type of loss of service that we will begin to see accrue onto this community that means that, from my view, it's reflective of the fact that if we are being paid 20 or 25% less than our counties to the north, we are not likely to be able to offer the same spectrum of medical services as those counties to the north.
It stands to reason to me. So that's going to happen for sure on September 1st, and this is just the beginning, and we don't want to alarm people, but they've got to know what's coming down here as a result of this reimbursement. You say there are other reasons, but I would imagine that the reimbursement issue is the principal reason, no?
Well, I think the most difficult part of a doctor's life is being on call. Doctors, when they really get down to it, the number one thing that drives them most nuts is how often are they on call, how difficult is the call, how many patients are they asked to care for who are dreadfully ill, for whom they will never receive payment. And at least in neurosurgery, it's every third night. And if one of them goes away for a vacation, it's every other night. And it's not just neurosurgery. The same phenomenon is occurring in key specialties. Early in my career, I worked in busy emergency room setting, and the first thing I would do when I came to work is I would look to the chart to see who was on call. The single most important specialty, and if our emergency rooms do not have adequate backup for general surgery, number one, neurosurgery, orthopedic surgery, close follow-up, the kind of care that you can provide in an emergency room plummets without those key physician backups. What's concerned me with general surgery is at one point in the 80s, we had 12 surgeons at Dominican rotating and taking their share of call nightly, and now we are down to four.
And the reason is that the others retired or have most of them relocated because they couldn't afford to live here?
An element of relocation, but what we are seeing is an aging in the physician population, particularly specialists. At our hospitals, once a physician hits age 60, they're no longer expected to take a call rotation. So the burden falls more and more on the physicians who are in practice under the age of 60, and if the economic realities of your county preclude bringing in newer, younger replacement physicians, then what you have is fewer and fewer physicians taking care of or dealing with the most difficult part of medical care. And that link between the emergency room and, say, a general surgeon, that's a key. I call it the linchpin in the delivery of health care, because when you're in trouble, either if you're a patient or an emergency room physician, and you need a general surgeon, or you need an ICU nurse to care for that acutely ill patient, what will happen is the Sentinel's done some excellent work on this recently. Emergency rooms will close. The recent series of articles, Code Red in the emergency room, where if
now wait a minute, you're not talking about the doc in the box. You're talking about that, too. You're talking about actual emergency rooms in the hospitals and at medical clinics?
I am talking about the articles that the Sentinel was referring to, the fact that from time to time, either lacking adequate nurses or and not so much physician backup. Either the hospital is full or they lack the appropriate nursing staff to care for patients. From time to time, a hospital, and this is not just in Santa Cruz, may have to close its doors to ambulance traffic. And we are concerned that those times, the frequency may be increasing in the coming years. From the physician, physician delivery side of it, we are desperately in need of new general surgeons to come into this community to help share in the burden of that call responsibility. And we're working.
Dr. Larry, what is your specialty in medicine?
Family practice.
A family practice. Okay.
Correct.
And do you maintain a family practice, or does your job as CEO at Santa Cruz Medical Clinic take up all your time so that you can't?
Essentially all my time. I still fill in on weekends at urgent care at Santa Cruz Medical Clinic once or twice a month.
When you decided to become a physician, did you plan to become involved in administration or clinic administration or hospital administration, or did you plan to be a practitioner?
Practitioner.
Uh-huh. And what made it change? Why did you decide to go into administration?
I gradually became more and more interested in the financial aspects and the larger picture, the global aspects of the delivery of care, and realized that a lot of things were broken, and that
Do you believe that fewer people are choosing to enter the medical profession because of these problems now? Or do you think it hasn't gotten to that point, but might?
Well, applications to medical school have had a bit of a sawtooth roller coaster, but the general trend is downward. Fewer and fewer individuals. You know, a primary care physician that starts practice or is 5 to 10 years out, the incomes that they receive are not substantially higher than other key individuals in the healthcare delivery system. You know, an ICU nurse or a key X-ray technician.
To own a home in Santa Cruz County for a young medical doctor has got to be as difficult as it is for just about anybody else these days.
Well, we have two superb young women family practitioners in Santa Cruz Medical Clinic that we've recruited in the last 2 years, both of whom very busy, very well liked. We measure carefully the quality of care that our docs receive, and theirs were almost off the charts. And both of them, one's leaving to Oregon, one's leaving to West Virginia, simply in order to purchase a home. And that's a great loss, and we will certainly miss them, and their patients will miss them.
Wow. You're listening to the KFCO Saturday Special. My name is Michael Z. Co-host in the studio at KFCO is Mike Schmidt. Thanks very much, Mike, for helping us out. Our guest in the studio is Dr. Larry DiCataldi, who is the CEO of the Santa Cruz Medical Clinic. And the subject today of the Saturday Special is the Medicare crisis in Santa Cruz County in particular. Why is it that Santa Cruz County is being classified as a rural community, and therefore the Medicare payments to physicians are so low that the physicians can't even afford to treat Medicare patients? Therefore, little by little, in fact, I should say probably lot by lot now, the medical doctors are opting out of treating Medicare patients altogether. That's a pretty scary situation that's developing, folks. And that is our discussion today, our topic of discussion on the KFCO Saturday Special. It's about 6 minutes before 11 a.m., and our phone numbers for your participation on this subject are 479-1080 or 477-1340. Our fax number is 475-2967, and our area code is 831. I understand on line two we have CK, who will be our next caller. So let's punch up CK here and welcome CK to KSBO. Hello there.
Hi. I hope this is a good connection. I just tuned in, and I overheard the comment about costs and Medicare, and I just want to bring it from a standpoint of I'm currently facing a major medical crisis, and having paid taxes for years, having paid for insurance for years, I was in a three day loop between coverages, and I ended up in our county finding out the real true problems from a patient standpoint. Is we apparently people who go in to get services are faced with the fact that doctors and clinics and everybody are going through this crunch. It's because we're, you know, as a nation, we're paying $26 billion a year in social services. Actually, I'm sorry, I heard that was in California, to illegal immigrants. And I've gone to get medical care for a major disability with, I have right now an HMO in Cobra. You can imagine what that's like. And I'm facing potentially Medicruise in the future. And I've been told that services are going to be almost nil for me because of this crisis. And I wanted to hear what you had to say in regards to why this is out of balance. You know, why is this? This is a rural area, but due to real estate speculation and welfare benefits provided to agricultural companies, you know, for their workers. Like, we pay benefits for their workers, but nobody's paying on their end into the system. And we're faced with this.
Well, maybe I'm blind, CK, but when I go out on Morrissey Boulevard overpass and look down at the gridlock, I don't think this is a rural area at all.
No, we are, but due to speculation and greed, we turned into a real estate area. And we, you know, this is an area we want to protect the beauty of the area and still grow healthy food and things like that. And we're faced with...
That certainly leads us into another topic that's a topic unto itself on the Saturday special, this whole idea about growth management and what it has done. It has created the real estate price situation, in my opinion. I feel very strongly about that. But let's see what Dr. Larry has to say about your comments.
Well, CK, one of the other pieces of the puzzle here is at the state level, the $24 or $25 billion projected budget cuts at the state level are having a profound impact on the healthcare dollars that the state is allocating, and that impacts Medi-Cal reimbursement rates. That impacts California Children's Services (CCS) reimbursement rates. That impacts what counties get in dollars to care for their own indigent patients. And you mentioned Medicruise, and Medicruise would be a stopgap health plan, a safety net that would be provided for residents of this county who do not qualify for Medi-Cal or Medicare.
Well, you know, from my standpoint, I'm doing everything I can to avoid going in the system. You know, luckily I have avoided it a few times, but you know, it gets down to that everybody's getting greedy. You know, even the pharmaceutical companies. But it's we have to look at, you know, why are we paying all this money for people to have excess amount of children? I mean, I'm sorry, but that's we're not looking at people coming from other countries to have children. And you know, I'm all for children, but there is an imbalance going on, and we're attracting it. The agricultural companies are attracting it, and you know.
And our current president wants to validate it. Also, that's what's really disgusting.
It's pretty confusing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I also wanted to ask a question, if I can, to the doctor.
Go.
That the doctors are trained very well to, I think, diagnose in many cases. But one of the problems with health care is that people, in a lot, you have to accept this, people aren't getting better. There's a lot of increased problems. And part of it is that doctors aren't trained in nutrition. They're not trained in what you call true nutrition. And
CK,
restoration of health is really part of it.
We're going to have to hold over because we're about 10 seconds
away from the top of the hour.
We'd be happy to hold you over if you'd like, CK, because this is a really interesting topic. So
it's coming up, Bill.
Why don't we do that, and we'll just turn this over to Bobby or Mike for the legal ID and the segue into you USA Network News.
This is KSCO on KOMY Santa Cruz. Stay tuned now for USA Network News.
But I had to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Well, good afternoon. It's 7 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock. You're listening to KSCO, the Saturday special, with Dr. Larry DiCatelli. And he's the CEO for the Santa Cruz Medical Center. We got Michael Zuerling on the line. And we're going to go back to CK, who has a second question for the doctor. CK, are you there?
Hi.
Okay, Larry. Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, go for it, CK.
I know it's off track, but looking at getting well, many people are talking about this, that they go and they try to get help, and whatever the financial challenges are, there's a big challenge, which is getting the right care. And with the limitations in our county, there's several types of doctors and specialists that just aren't here. There aren't a lot of choices, and I guess they're overwhelmed.
That's getting worse, actually, according to the direction we're headed, right?
I would suspect it is. And, I've seen just in between my coverages, I paid cash at a clinic, and several people were taken ahead of me who had nothing to pay. And I paid full amount, and I got limited care. And, I won't go into that, but I've seen these things from so many perspectives. And, we keep looking at these systems are feeding each other, but nobody's getting better, and we haven't even corrected the government problems, which is that, we really need to monitor our border situation better. Financially, we can't support this, and, I've paid thousands and thousands of dollars to insurance and taxes, and, in between two jobs, in 3 days, I was deeply injured, and I fell into that niche. And, I really began to wonder, why am I getting this kind of care, or why is this circumstance happening? And more I'd see who was filling the waiting rooms, and I was hearing comments about how people weren't getting paid, and then I started doing some reading and seeing, what's out of balance. And but it's from the health standpoint, I also see that doctors aren't looking at they didn't want to use the term healing. They just are part of their system, pharmaceutical companies and things to cover up symptoms and, or invasive procedures or ignoring what's going on when you can actually restore a lot of the human body nutritionally. So, I see these combination problems, and people aren't getting better, and it's getting more expensive.
Okay. So is there a question in there?
Yeah, well, I would like to know if doctors are going to swallow their pride and start taking deep nutrition classes and figure out that part of getting well is restoring health nutritionally and, to not just
referring. Great question, CK, great question. And I believe that, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Larry, aren't the medical schools now taking nutrition very serious and making it a required part of the curriculum?
Actually, I think that change occurred some 20 years ago, and we started to see nutritional training be increasingly important. But not all physicians, and CK, this is sort of the philosophical. Let me broaden your question. You may have a particular need in your relationship between your physician and your healthcare needs and how you view what works for you. What we really need in this community or any community are a wide range of well-trained physicians so that you can choose a physician, develop a relationship that works for you, and that relationship is preserved. And what we're seeing in Santa Cruz, and we have many young physicians come into the community, and at least in primary care, over the last decade, we've lost almost a third that have come into the community. There's been an exodus of those physicians. And in general, I think that, that the younger physicians that are that we are lucky to bring into the community have a sort of a philosophical bent that's more consistent with what you're looking for than, you know, maybe was true 30, 40 years ago. Thank you, CK.
Okay, thanks.
And I see we have Ben and Salinas on line four. Let's bring Ben up and see what he has to say. Ben, you're on the air on the KSCO Saturday special.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. Yes, my focus is this. I think it's we should be respectful of the fact that it's much more important, very important, to spend $1 billion a day for the killing and dying machine of the New World Order there in Washington. Why is it, why would it not be viable to the taxpayers and the Americans whom our Constitution is supposed to serve to be willing to spend as much for life as we are for death? And plus, I think it's kind of not very nice neighborly to want to deny Canadians who'd get tired of those long, long waiting lists. I mean, isn't it wrong to deny Canadian women coming across the border to have their babies in subsidized hospitals? I mean, in Hitler's Germany, to punish women who got pregnant, they tied their legs together and they would let them die in childbirth, or maybe it would suit these people better, people that make $220,000 a year. Why don't they just, when these people that come across the Canadian border or borders, you know, that if you want to specialize, I don't know, why don't they just shoot a bullet through the fetus and the mother? That way you can save money for the bullets and give more to the Carlyle Group. And remember, the president, Mr. Bush, signed an order just yesterday saying that the HMOs can have your private medical information. Now, HMOs are in it for the business, the dollar amount. American people need to ask. It costs $2 to produce a pill for the pharmaceutical industry. Why are they allowed to gouge the Medicare and Medi-Cal system 70-80% up to $10 a pill that costs $2 to prepare? Why are these people not going to jail for the traitors they are?
Who said it costs $2 to produce a pill?
It is a known fact that the pharmaceutical to the HMO providers and the Medicare providers are charging 70-80% above costs of what it costs. They are being allowed.
Well, I believe that.
They are being allowed.
But it only costs $2 to produce a pill. I thought it cost 0.1 cent.
Well,
I know there's a lot of research and development that goes into creating the pill, but
yes, it costs $50 million to produce Marinol, this wannabe THC thing, when you can grow it in your backyard and get a pure plant. But you know, it's like the problem that confronted Tesla: where do you put the meter? Well, you know what I'm saying, that this HMO Empowerment Act, letting bean counters determine, you know, when you give the HMO industry, the dollar people, here's what happens. They determine a board of bookkeepers and people that are on vacation permanently in Sweden and Norway and the Netherlands, you know, the land of pedophiles, you know, these offshore rich, very wealthy. They take a person that has a very serious disease. And let's say you have leukemia or you have Hodgkin's or something. They have determined how much treatment according to a dollar amount you will be allowed. And then they can determine, well, this person will be dead in 6 months anyway. And for the dollar consideration, they just disallow your treatment. In other words, when you reach the dollar amount, you're a dead duck. This is the HMO Empowerment Act. This is treason. And I'm saying, let's stop the racism. How about let's just be good neighbors and look out for each other? And I say, if you're going to give $1 billion to the Carlyle Group of George Bush, then give another billion to our wonderful doctors like this gentleman today, and give them the respect to the income and the advantage they need to serve we, the people who paid the taxes that built this damn country.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks very much for your call to the Saturday special. Always passionate. I want to ask Dr. Larry if he can explain to us the difference between the major kinds of insurance systems versus HMOs and so forth. Can you sort of bring us up to date on that? Because I have a very hazy understanding of that, and if that's the case, probably our listeners do as well. What's the difference between health insurance and an HMO? A lot of commercials you see on television say, no HMOs, please.
There's, I think, globally, three types of payment structures. The government-sponsored plans, which might include workman's compensation plans, Medi-Cal, Medicruise locally, and Medicare would fit into one category. Those typically, the service, there is a, for each procedure or type of visit that, that a physician provides, they're reimbursed a set dollar amount, which tends to be from 50 to 100% of the Medicare fee schedule. The next class, sort of going up the ladder in terms of reimbursement, the capitated or health HMO, health maintenance program, those types of programs date back to the late 50s and 60s, and Kaiser Permanente is a prime example of an HMO type of health care delivery system where physicians receive an X dollar amount per month per capitated member, and it behooves the essentially.
What does capitated mean?
That's capitated means that a dollar amount is provided. This is the HMO payment system. A physician or a healthcare delivery system receives a dollar amount per month for each member. And that may be
regardless of whether that member has service or
yeah,
not, right?
Demands or needs service, and
right.
And it may be say $50 to $60 a month, even though that patient, you know, doesn't go to the doctor for 10
right.
years.
So that's just like health. That's just like standard health insurance, right?
It is, except the risk is passed to the healthcare delivery system provider, that the hospital delivery system or the physician group. Receives the money regardless of whether they provide the service.
Oh.
As opposed to an the standard fee for service, PPO, health plan, a Blue Cross, a Blue Shield, Aetna, these types of fee for service plans, which is the third category, the employer or the employee pays a premium to the health plan. The health plan has the revenue stream and only pays out for services that are actually provided based on some agreed-to fee schedule. So that's a fee-for-service plan. The physician only gets paid, the hospital only gets paid if services are provided. Under a capitated plan, the physician group, the hospital delivery system will receive the money regardless of whether services are provided. So that in the HMO model, the critics will say that there is a financial incentive to a couple things happen. There may be a financial incentive to not provide needed care,
right?
Or that there are so many barriers to care, a non-medical. You know, you hear the horror stories of the non-physician who sits in an office, you know, 1,000 miles away. Who has the authority to deny a given service for a patient?
It happens all the time, no?
Well, it happens. We in our institution have certainly taken control over that decision process to the best of our ability internally, so that we know that it's a trained physician who that we know, and that there are checks and balances. There's an interpersonal relationship where the physician who orders a test or feels a service is needed, we have tried to diminish as best we can, almost to zero, the negative aspects of the system of HMO services.
It is 11:19, hour number two of the KSCO Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO. My name is Michael Z. My co-host in the studio at KSCO today is Mike Schmidt. And our guest, a special guest, is Dr. Larry DiGataldi, who is the CEO of the Santa Cruz Medical Clinic. The topic today is the growing Medicare crisis, particularly in Santa Cruz County. It's happening all over the country, but in Santa Cruz in particular, we are losing a lot of very talented medical people as a result of their inability to be adequately compensated by the federal government. And it's a pretty scary prospect here, folks. We're looking for your participation. If you have any questions or comments, want to join the conversation, our phone numbers are 479-1080 or 1340. Our fax number is 475-2967. I think we have someone named Reggie in Monterey. No, we don't. He was on line one. If he wants to call back, we'll get to him. We have John in Capitola, I believe, on line two. John, welcome to KSCO. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks.
I just wanted to thank Ben of Salinas for proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that Medicare needs a higher reimbursement rate for psychological services. Thanks again, Ben.
You be nice, John.
No, I just want to thank Ben because he proves the point, you know, in such a concise way, and I just want to thank him. You guys take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
There goes John in Capitola. Is Reggie back, or, David and Felton. David and Felton on line, I think we have David and Felton on line three. Let's punch up line three and see if David is there. Hey, David, welcome to the KSCO special, if you're there.
Hello?
If you're not, yeah, hey there.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name's David. I'm a nurse. I just wanted to bring up a problem with the RNs and LVNs in this community. Well, one thing is, like, I do home health care. I go into the homes, and I work with patients who have, like, MS or ALS, and they're on ventilators. And just because of that, the high cost of living here, basically maybe 5 years ago, there was, like, 80% to 90% coverage in these private homes. Now, people are lucky if they can get 30% to 50% because they don't pay the nurses enough, or they're leaving this area because we can't rent places or we can't buy homes, and it's a real problem. And a lot of these people that are getting home health care are going to either end up in institutions, or the family's got to take care of them, and it's a lot of stress. And it's just that the cost of living here is driving people out, and I think that needs to be addressed.
I just wonder if the problem, I don't mean to sound naive here, but I'm wondering if the problem might not fix itself, because if enough people are forced out of the area, don't you think the prices will drop because they have to? Because there aren't any people rich enough to pay the outrageous prices.
It might take
a while, but I don't know.
I hope that happens, but in the meantime, I know nurses that are, like, looking to go north where they can afford to buy houses and stuff like that. In the meantime, like, families are suffering because there's nobody to come in and take care. Like, I work for one patient who his mom's 75 years old, and this guy fell off a trestle and can't walk, like Christopher Reeves. And, this guy weighs 200 pounds, and that family cannot take care of this person by himself, and there's just no coverage at night. There's no night nurses, And in the meantime, it's just like the greed, or whatever the real estate thing is doing, is causing a lot of problems. And it'd just be nice to have, people that are nurses and social workers and teachers. It'd be nice to be able to afford to live here and do good work in the community, but it's just making it harder, And I'm even thinking about leaving. Just a problem that needs to be addressed, But you might be right. Maybe things will drop when people find that there's no help,
And there's no help, and there's no health.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I just wanted to bring, and also I just think one other things too. I think they should utilize. I always heard the word RN, but I wanted to just bring up the point about LVNs. We do basically the same thing as the RN, except the only difference between an RN and an LVN is the LVN cannot give IV medication, but we can start IVs. But a lot of the hospitals are not utilizing LVNs, and we go to school for like 2 years, and basically go through the same training as an RN.
So LVN stands for licensed vocational nurse.
Right,
and RN is registered nurse, of course.
Right, and I wish like that Dominicans and Watsonville Hospital and even the Santa Cruz Medical Clinic, I think they should utilize LVN, and we do a good job, and we just and I think that would be cut some of the costs down, and also would. More nurses available.
David, a couple of points. My job, I actually oversee the visiting nurse. I don't know which home health agency you work for. Don't have to say, but I oversee the VNA, Visiting Nurse Association of Santa Cruz. And
yeah, but they don't take Medi-Cal patients. I work for a company that's just doing Medi-Cal that people want then. So
it's home health is also having an analogous crisis.
Yeah.
And most. Now, to be eligible for home health, as you know, you have to be a shut-in. Some 90% of VNA's patients are Medicare, and they are beholden to the somewhat capricious ups and downs of what the federal government does there. And I agree that home health is an absolutely essential part of our community's healthcare system. The other point you make in the broader picture of the RN LVN question, I think you will find the state of California just changed or has passed a series of what we call unfunded mandates down from seismic retrofitting to our healthcare institutions, hospitals. But there will be the nurse staff ratio will be set by the state government.
Right.
And I think a lot of institutions will be moving towards more of a combination RN-LVN team approach to nursing.
Right. Because, that'd be great.
Because LVNs are licensed nurses who will provide the nurse patient ratio that the state's mandated.
And you know, Cabrillo, they used to have an LVN program. For some reason, they cut that out.
Right.
And you know, and that's a good program for a lot of people who don't want to feel like it's a bit hard to take microbiology and
right.
chemistry, and we basically, but we do, but they give good instruction about nursing care, you know. So.
Well, but we are fortunate that Cabrillo has an RN program.
Yeah, that's
a
good point.
It's a two-year program, and for a community such as ours, really the larger strategy, at least what we're trying to do is for our non-physician, we of course have no medical schools in this county, but when we train nurses or X-ray technicians at Cabrillo, and we're fortunate to have that community college, we need to retain those RNs and
yeah,
those X-ray
a good point.
Technicians, and we need to provide. I discussed Medicare reimbursement, how it impacts physician reimbursement, but I absolutely the problem goes all the way throughout the healthcare workforce.
Yeah. You know, one other thing too, I hear a lot of RNs in the RNs in the home health care industry, we actually get paid the same as the LVNs, but I hear a lot of RNs say that they're really afraid to go into a place like Dominican Hospital because they feel that it's so dangerous to work at a place like that because so many patients to the nurse that they're afraid they're going to make a mistake and kill somebody. There's a big fear factor about going to hospitals for a lot of nurses right now.
What we see, at least in home health care, is that the average age of the typical home health RN is higher than the acute care facilities. So as in the next 10 years, we're going to see more and more home health nurses retire. And the needs, the home health care needs of our community will be unmet because we don't have.
And one other thing before I leave, there was an article in the New York Times saying about the nursing shortage. You know, and it's kind of like nobody's really. It's kind of in the box thinking. You know, they're not addressing a lot of stuff to recruit young people. A lot of young people just see the nursing profession as a dead end. Job and bad pay and lack of power and being overworked and none of these issues are really being addressed, and hopefully something will happen, but when people need some help and they realize that maybe nurses.
Milton, David, we appreciate your call to the Saturday special on AM.
Okay, thank you.
CSBO.
Thanks.
Take care. We have lines open at 479-1080 and 477-1340. Have we not received any faxes today? That's unusual. 475-2967 is our fax number. Maybe we should check the machine and see if there are a fax or two there. Our next caller will be Margaret in Santa Cruz. Margaret, you're on the air. Welcome to KFCO.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hey, I think people should educate themselves on healthful living. You know, listen to KFCO's daily morning show with Dr. Wallach. It is amazing. Information. I have a brother that has his babies at home. He's had 6 children at home. He schools them at home, and he got a Vitamix, and he makes his own whole grain flour. You can compost your food waste and grow a backyard garden, and people lose the fat.
Well, no, nobody would argue with that, Margaret, for sure, but there are still going to be people who get hit by trucks. And there are still going to be people that need surgery, and there are still going to be a need for medical doctors who need to be able to afford to practice.
That's
so
right.
That's the topic today.
Well, that's right. But people are sick because they have a sick lifestyle.
25 pounds overweight, you're considered obese. You have to stop smoking, walk in the fresh air and sunshine, and stop drinking carbonated beverages and drink filtered water and wear sunscreen and eat organic, reduce the meat, you know, reform the health insurance. Insurance agents make lucrative commissions on health insurance premiums.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So there's so much we could do to be a healthy nation, people are just, they're causing themselves this burden on our medical people. Thank you.
So you're saying that before you leave, if people took better care of themselves, then the medical system wouldn't be overburdened and we wouldn't have the problem that we're having. Is that what you're suggesting?
Absolutely. I mean, what's a doctor supposed to do when you're walking around with all that ugly fat? Come on. Get healthy. Come on, America.
What a great call. Thank you very much, Margaret in Santa Cruz. I hope she'll call again. That's great. I think we should take Richard N. Watsonville's call. He's on line four. Welcome, Richard, to the KSCO Saturday special.
Thank you, Mike. First of all, I'd kind of like to ask the doctor. Hey, Doc.
Hi.
Who has a bigger load, doctors or teachers?
Well, why don't you
restate the question? I mean, how many patients you go through a day, Doc?
It depends on the type of practice. You know, a dermatologist may have 35 patients. A surgeon may have six.
Yeah, well, a school teacher, you know, has like 30 in a class and six classes a day. That's about 180 students, I would think. You know, Mike said something a little while ago that if enough of the little people leave, doctor prices might drop.
I said real estate prices will drop if enough people leave because they can't afford to live here. That's what I said.
Well, what if we get enough doctors to leave? I mean, pretty soon there's going to be nothing here but doctors. I mean, it seems like the government money and the public money, is not good enough or
Richard,
just no good?
You're not making sense today.
I want to know if Medi-Cal and Medicare and those guys are paying these doctors their money.
The answer is no. They're not. They're not paying enough.
Oh, there you go. Now you just answered it, Mike. They're not paying enough. Now, what is enough? We can't have dead air here, people. I mean, you guys, you doctors took an oath when you graduated from school, the Hippocratic Oath, right? In that Hippocratic Oath, Doc, it says you're not even allowed to charge any money for your services. It says that you're not even allowed to... What? You're not even allowed to charge anybody to teach your services. Isn't that right, Doc?
Well, I don't remember the details. That was written 2,500 years ago, and
But you took the oath to get out of college, didn't you?
That oath is really administered at some medical schools. Forbids a doctor from performing an abortion. You're not allowed to go into homes to provide care. There's a number of oddities there, and I really think that was something written 2,500 years ago, and it is not necessarily.
You're taking an oath you don't believe in. You're not going to abide by, for one thing.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys are. When was the last time the doctors in the United States went on strike? You remember that?
When was it?
It was 1969. We've only had three times in history when doctors have gone on strike. Once was in the United States. I believe the last one was in England. And it didn't work out too good for the doctors.
Well, all right, Richard, want to thank you for your participation today in the Saturday special. Always interesting to hear from you. There goes Richard at Watsonville. Let's hear from Sarah in Santa Cruz, our next caller on the KSCO Saturday special. Hello, Sarah. You're on the air.
Which line there?
Well, line one. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, Sarah on line one.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We can all hear you.
Okay. I called in very quickly just a few minutes ago because I feel this strong need to apologize for Richard of Watsonville to the doctor.
Oh. Yeah, it says here on the screen you think Richard is a bozo.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed about the things that he said.
Well, Richard has a different way of looking at things sometimes, and sometimes it's very, very... Sometimes I don't understand it, but he's a good guy. He's got a good heart. So,
well, doctor, I mean, I've been hearing about this stuff for years now. I hope something can actually happen to improve it. My husband works at Dominican ER, and I can't tell you how many times he comes home with the same little Instameal that he took to work that morning, because there was no time to stop and microwave his budget gourmet for 2 minutes.
Wow.
You know, I mean, they're absolutely swamped down there. He's been there 5 years, and he's one of the longest tenured people there. Everyone's leaving.
Does he ever wish that he had chosen another profession?
He loves medicine. He never wishes that he wasn't in medicine. Every now and then he comes home and says he's going to try to get a job with your group.
With Santa Cruz Medical Clinic.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, just to be able to deal with people who have insurance, don't have an expectation of an entitlement, you know, don't come in on welfare in their cell phones, you know, and they've got more money and nicer clothes than my husband is wearing, and complain about why it took 3 hours to be seen when they have a hangnail and there's someone dying in the next room. So I know that gets really hard and old for him. But, I'm on the inside of this with my husband, but I just can't praise doctors and physician assistants enough. I am totally in love with Mary Pates in your group. She's been my doctor for years, and if she ever decided to leave the area, I don't know what I'd do. So, you know, I hope
Sarah,
that at some point something can improve with this situation.
We really appreciate your call. You have any ideas about how or where the improvement might come from? Because that's the purpose of this program, to come up
obviously,
with
ideas. Reimbursements have to increase.
Uh-huh.
Because,
well, how
you know,
could that happen? I mean, Health and Welfare Secretary Tommy Thompson, we were talking about that, Dr. Larry, off the air earlier. He definitely has the authority to make things change without having to have an act of Congress. Is that right?
Well, let me go back into how Washington, from my perspective, how Washington works. Interestingly enough, we started to raise this issue about a year ago. Alan Buchwald, who is one of the docs that works at Dominican Hospital, who is currently the chief of the County Medical Society, has been working on this Medicare issue for some time. But partially, I think we're increasingly strident because we're feeling the real microeconomic effects of the disparity between reimbursement and housing costs here. And Sarah, a lot of the things that you mentioned, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's there is a feeling of in for physicians that I think beleaguerment is a good word that describes how a lot of physicians feel. And I don't know your husband, but I share a lot of the things that you said. But in Washington, at least in the House, the committee that looks at apportionment issues is Ways and Means. And 2 weeks ago, a subcommittee of Ways and Means, the healthcare subcommittee, chaired by a congresswoman from a Republican from Connecticut, last name Johnson, I think it's Nancy Johnson, they looked at this Medicare reimbursement morass that's not just California, but it's throughout the country. And they are looking at the issue. Unfortunately, there's only one California congressman on that committee, and that is Pete Stark. And we're meeting with our congressional representatives to make certain that, at least from the House side, that Pete Stark knows about the issue. I think he's from Alameda County, and they're at a fairly healthy 20% higher reimbursement than Santa Cruz. What we would like to see come out of the secretary from Secretary Thompson's office or from the House is just designate each county as its own locality. Just call Santa Cruz its own locality. Don't link it to San Benito, Monterey, MODOC. It costs more to practice medicine here than it does in Los Angeles, then in San Diego, then in Sonoma, then in, I think it's 49 other counties in the state, and yet we're paid well below a number of counties that
so
we're,
does this Tommy Thompson, health secretary,
right,
have the power to,
yes, yes,
to unlink things,
yes,
unlink us with other counties?
Yes. All they have to do is say, okay, we measure the cost of practice by county in the state of California. Let's pay physician that factor. And in Santa Cruz, that would be a 9% increase for not just Medicare, but all other health plans, insurance products that are linked to Medicare. That would have a significant positive impact on not just what physicians receive, but what David and Felton received for providing home health care, what all aspects of the healthcare workforce would receive in reimbursement. And now,
well, Dr. Larry, is there something we could do? Is there? Can we write a letter, or some sort of a form letter, or something that we could put on our website for people to email?
Well, the Board of
Thompson?
The Board of Supervisors has written Secretary Thompson. The Santa Cruz Business Council has written him. Sam Farr is increasingly hearing from us, and there's one other factor that certainly gets the ire up amongst those of us that are close to this issue. Is Sam Farr successfully brought Monterey and Santa Cruz federal employees now up to the San Francisco designation for the wage index? That is, you know, a federal employee might do the same job in Oklahoma, but they're going to be paid more in San Francisco because there's a cost of living adjustment. Sam Farr recognized that the cost of living in Monterey and Santa Cruz was very high for federal employees, and was successful in bringing federal employees to parity to San Francisco federal employees in terms of the wage index.
Well, in the interest of consistency, maybe he should do the same thing for the medical doctors.
Well, I think you just stated what the obvious argument that we made to him, and his response is, and it's understandable, Medicare's rules have created sort of a barrier that's unassailable by suggesting that all the other counties in this rural designation have to so Medicare simply
and
needs.
I think the real reason is he thinks that there aren't enough doctors to vote for him.
I don't know.
Well, you know, I think that
would be the real reason. He'd jump on that bandwagon in a second if he thought it would make him some points.
You know, the doctor made the point before you got on the air, Michael, that one of the things that's an encumbered here is that the other counties who are in this rural designation have to agree, I assume, to accept less in order for us to get more. And so the motivation for them to do that is null and void, I would think. Why would you want to do that? Penalize your own doctor. So I think the issue of getting guys like Sam Farr, who I believe is in the district, holding public meetings, I think something next week is going to happen at the Santa Cruz City Council, if I remember right.
Yeah, well, he's been very responsive to this issue. He meets with chamber groups. He's met with the County Medical Society. He is meeting later this month with the Santa Cruz Business Council, and this is an agenda item that he's hearing about, and he's sympathetic. It's
if he thinks there's enough votes there, he'll fight. It's like anything else, I think.
I think if he realizes there's enough voters in this county who are concerned about this issue, regardless if they're doctors or not, then that may also add to the motivation.
One of the other larger initiatives that we see nationwide is disaster, following 9/11, is disaster preparedness. And I think by making the point that there's a significant attrition in the types of physicians that you need available in the event of a national disaster, I think that pointing out that Medicare reimbursements, the economic realities of what comes into this county in terms of dollars, if it's not sufficient to support our needs, and as they are today, imagine where we'll be in the event of a national disaster. And that is something that's close to him, and we've made that point, and I think he understands
sure.
it.
That's great. Listen, we should take a break, and will, but let's take line two. Gail on a cell phone. She's been waiting for quite a while. She's still there. Let's bring Gail up on...
Gail is gone.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's go ahead and take a break. This is the KSCO Saturday Special. It's 15 minutes before 12 noon. 15 minutes remain in hour number two of this Saturday Special, talking about the Medicare crisis. And we'll be back, so we hope you'll stay with us after this short break.
The new Infiniti G35 has more innovations than one could possibly cover in 60 seconds. So, should I talk about its class-leading 260 horsepower V6? Or its 5-speed automatic transmission with manual shift mode? How about its rear-wheel drive, Infiniti vehicle dynamic control, and racing-inspired aerodynamics that allows the G35 to knife through the wind and stick to the road? Or its 6-disc in-dash CD auto changer, Sojourner leather-appointed interior, 17-inch alloy wheels. I'd go on if I had 14 more minutes. The new Infiniti G35, brilliantly equipped at $30,495. Infiniti, accelerating the future.
Infiniti of Monterey, 1711 Del Monte Boulevard, Seaside.
Class claim based on Ward's lower luxury class, comparably equipped sedans. MSRP for the 2003 G35 luxury leather model with sunroof includes 545 destination charge, excluding tax, title, license, and other options. Dealer sets actual price.
Summertime at Super Snacks, the Turkey Shack. Going to the beach or the woods for a picnic? Well, drop in at Super Snacks. Everything is homemade and ready to go. Home-cooked, healthy turkey sandwiches, salads, dinners, and desserts, and more. It's fresh, healthy, and friendly. Super Snacks, your turkey shack. Super Snacks at the corner of Bromer and 17th. Open Monday through Friday, 10 to 7, and Saturday, 10 to 4. Call 462-4236. Super Snacks.
Carl's Jr. Restaurant would like to remind you that youth activities can be a vital influence in a young person's life. Sports, music, and hobbies can give your children the confidence they need to say no to drugs and yes to life. Enroll your children in positive adventures. This important message is from Carl's Jr. Restaurant, now with 4 locations to serve you. Watsonville, Capitola, Morgan Hill, and the brand new Gilroy location. That's Carl's Jr. Restaurant, taking the time to be involved.
It's out there, an insidious addiction plaguing literate people of Santa Cruz County. It starts innocently enough. You pick it up at a friend's house as a lark. It makes you feel enlightened. Pretty soon you're buying it on the street. The more you use it, the smarter you feel. Then before you know it, you're having it delivered to your home. I'm talking, of course, about the Santa Cruz Sentinel. It hooks you with a headline, then story after story. The Sentinel feeds your craving for knowledge. Every day, something new to stimulate your mind. There are even comics to trick your children into reading more, leading them to the harder stuff, like books. Beware, Santa Cruz County. The Sentinel is out there. Read it, and you may never be content to live in ignorance again. The Santa Cruz Sentinel. Your news, your stories, every day.
When you're serious about finding a local job or looking to hire local talent, you'll find it using the Santa Cruz Sentinel classifieds in print and online with more local listings than any other source in Santa Cruz County.
My name is Paul Wilkin, owner of Wilkin Construction, licensed contractor and member of the Better Business Bureau. For over 10 years, I've been improving people's homes on the Monterey Peninsula. I stick to my prices, show up on time, and give you the results you're looking for. Whether you want to replace a window, build a deck, or remodel any part of your house, call Wilkin Construction. After all, it is your home, and Wilkin Construction is building for better living. Call 626-4075. That's 626-4075.
California Contractor License Number
648459. And welcome back to the remaining 12 minutes of the KSCO Saturday Special. We're in hour number 2 talking about the Medicare crisis with studio guest Dr. Larry D. Gataldi from the Santa Cruz Medical Clinic. He's actually the chief executive officer. And Mike Schmidt is also in the studio with us. And we have a number of callers. Your last chance to weigh in on this topic, 479-1080 or 477-1340 or 475-2967. Still haven't heard that we have any faxes, but if we do, please break in and let's read them. I guess we're going back to Kim in Santa Cruz now on line 3. Kim, you're on the air on KSCO. Hello?
How this relates to Medicare, but I'm sure it does. My mom was 86. She passed away a few months ago. She was seeing a doctor in the in one of the other medical groups here in Santa Cruz, and I felt she was, and I told him that she was being treated pretty much like an old car that wasn't worth fixing. And she was in and out of the hospital a number of times. She essentially died of some very large infected kidney stones with Proteus. And after seeing a urologist in this other group who said she didn't have an infection, she was hospitalized after about three hospitalizations. And three tries that I had with appointments with a urologist in your medical group, finally her doctor called your urologist in the medical group and had her see her in the hospital, and within 10 minutes he had a pretty good idea that she had infected stones, and the next day with tests found out that she did. But at that point she was so sick and so down that she never got well enough to be able to have the treatments and finally passed away. So the other medical group basically just treated her like she was a crazy old lady. They told me that she had probably had Alzheimer's. And
what other medical group?
Should I say it?
Sure.
Western Medical Group. And at any rate, I know two of your doctors that finally saw my mom. I think she would have had a chance to live, but they agreed that she had been grossly mismanaged.
Kim, I'm also sorry.
Anyway, it's just really frustrating, and seems to me that the elderly are just kind of written off. They made a mistake in her chart. They said she was 95 rather than 86.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd act crazy when the infection would get real bad. She'd become septic. And no matter how many times I told them that, you know, leave her on antibiotics, she gets better.
Well, here's how it relates to Medicare and the larger picture. And I'm sorry about your loss, but the urologist that I think you're referring to who made the diagnosis that's in our group, and I know who he would be probably, but won't say his name, but he...
Pardon me, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Well, the urologist that took care of your mom at the end in our group is an excellent urologist, and we were very fortunate to bring him to this community, and, you know, it's an example of where, well, maybe the quality of life here did attract a young physician, and it's in our best interest as a community to continue to bring in those types of new doctors of high quality. That fellow's trained at Mayo, and retain them so that, you know, we can provide the very best care for all patients regardless of what type of insurance they have.
He is just a wonderful physician. Even in being able to talk to me and counsel me when we finally knew that she probably wasn't going to make it, he sat down with me and I was able to ask him, you know, what his thoughts were on what I should do.
Well, Kim, thanks very much for calling the Saturday show.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, our next caller will be Ellie Kramer on line one. Punch up Ellie and say, hey, welcome back to KSCO.
Hi, Michael. So far, mostly what I've been hearing is bottom line is for the government to loosen up on the purse strings for more medical dollars. But I think we can all agree that the major load, especially in this state, on the medical dollar is illegal aliens' load on the medical care system. And I'm not just talking about Mexicans. For an example, back in 1990, when I went into the hospital with a heart attack and had to end up paying cash over $100,000 to be treated, I had a good friend who was an illegal alien from Great Britain who had a tree fall on him when he was doing some under the table logging work, and his itemized bill was $225,000. It was paid for 100% by the state of California under Medi-Cal. Now,
yours was paid 0%?
Yes, mine was paid by me. His was paid by me also, basically. And if you multiply that, the woman who called about the emergency room, her husband works in the ER, ask her what percentage of those patients that are dragging her husband down with overload are people who should even be in this country legally. It's just the fact. You know, the illegal citizens or the illegal residents drain on our medical economy is tearing it to pieces.
Dr. Larry, what do you think about that?
Well, I do think that to some extent, those that have no insurance and have to pay cash are the biggest losers in our current system, our crazy payment system. And I'm sorry to hear about your experience. But for the most part, and this is really true, this is not idealistic. Physicians provide the same care regardless in this community. I do not know of a physician who provides different standards and levels of care based on payment structure.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying is the very fact that you do provide that same standard of care for people who aren't putting anything into the system is what's going to bring the system down. It's the law of economics.
Mm-hmm.
And until we address that, that delicate, politically incorrect subject, we're not going to get anywhere with this situation.
Yeah, it's true. We've sort of been dancing around it, and our next caller, Harold in Aptos, I don't know what he's going to say. It doesn't say anything on the screen, but I'm willing to bet it has something to do with this topic of illegal aliens and taking up the system. But Ellie, if you're done, we're going to move on to Harold and
hello?
Be our last caller for the day. Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, cheer up, doctors. You're still the most noblest profession of them all. I went to a Watsonville community once, and the room was full of people with babies speaking Spanish. Let's keep it at that. And the poor old intern was in there with a resident, and babies were throwing up all over him, and there was blood all over him. And they didn't flinch a bit. They went from patient to patient. So you have your flaws, of course, because we have the Medicare, Medi-Cal scandals of overbilling years ago, and I would slam the doctors that were caught in that because it brings you all down. I would also have special tax breaks. I call it privatized real estate for any doctors, new doctors moving into the community. There's plenty of room in San Lorenzo Valley, Felton, and Pajaro, but not in Watsonville or Santa Cruz. You're built up there. Special bank loans at low rates for doctors buying new homes. And finally, Ben has been shooting at me all week while I've been working. So Ben has called in and said that he believes on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, we should have a wild weekend. He called Stella Doyle's show and be partying all two or three days. A lot of pregnancies will come out of that wild conduct that Mexican people do in Watsonville and Salinas. They'll end up in the emergency rooms. And who will pay for it, Ben? It'll be the taxpayers. So don't go telling me that I'm a racist and you're some kind of a saint, because you got to get a grip on health costs. That's what we're talking about today.
Got to get a Saturday special with you and Ben in the same room.
Thank you, doctor.
Okay, John and Aptos will be our actual last caller. Real quick, John is on line two.
Go ahead, John.
Hi, John.
Hello.
How are you here?
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I'll try to be very quick. The whole conversation this morning has been very depressing to me, because it gives us insight into what awaits us with truly, totally socialized medicine on the horizon. We have a doctor here who's worried about political issues and compensation from our federal and state government and our officials who represent us, rather than looking at the private sector and for funding and payment from his patients. Not very long ago, the relationship was between doctor and patient and perhaps a third-party insurance carrier. Today, the third party is the federal government, far removed from our needs and our concerns, thousands of miles isolated from us, and it makes no sense, and the path we're heading down, in fact, will bring the system down.
John,
doctors,
I'm so happy we took your call. We're at the end of our program, though, gentlemen. Want to thank all of you, co-host Mike Schmidt, Dr. Larry DiGataldi, and my mother Kay Zwirling, for producing this program, and Robert W. Drake, our engineer extraordinaire. So this is KSCO Santa Cruz, AOMY Watsonville. The prospective program is up next. We hope you'll stay tuned to KSCO.
me and Dale were singing Little Runaway.
That's all, folks. KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY, Watsonville, we now join USA News already in progress.
People, investors, corporate leaders, economists, farmers, and government policymakers are...